The Polish ghettos. One can see, in general outline, what happened to the Polish, and Latvian and Lithuanian Jews by consulting the Holocaust literature, which has been contributed by survivors. In the larger towns and in the cities, the Jews within Poland were quartered in ghettos, which existed throughout the war. In Poland, there were particularly large ghettos at Łódź, Lietzmannstadt, Warsaw, Białystok, Lviv, and Grodno, in Lithuania at Vilna and Kovno, in Latvia, as we noted above, at Riga. Although the survivor literature offers endless ravings about exterminations, frequently of a sort not reconcilable with the legend, for example, gas chambers in Krakow in December 1939, it also offers enough information for one to grasp approximately how things were. In each ghetto, there was a Jewish council, Judenrat, which was the internal government of the ghetto. The ghetto police were Jewish and responsible to the Judenrat. The Judenrat usually counseled cooperation with the Germans because, under the circumstances, it saw no other plausible course. The Germans made frequent demands for labor details drawn from the ghetto, and the Judenrat then drew up the lists of people to be thus conscripted. There were also resistance organizations in the larger ghettos, usually well-armed, whose members often viewed the Judenrat as composed of German stooges. Davidovich's book devotes several chapters to conditions in the Polish ghettos. Although the initial policy of the Germans, immediately after occupying Poland, had been to forbid Jewish schools, this policy was soon abandoned, and Jewish children received an essentially regular education in schools, operated either privately or under the authority of the Judenrat. Cultural activities for adults, literary, theatrical, musical, helped alleviate the otherwise unhappy features of ghetto life. The Jewish Social Welfare Agency was the ZSS, dissolved in mid-1942 by the Germans but shortly later reconstituted as the JUS, Jüdische Unterstützungsstelle, which drew supplies of food, clothing and medicine from the German civil administration, and which also maintained contact, through the German Red Cross, with foreign organizations that provided money and supplies. Before the U.S. entry into the war, the bulk of such external funds came from the Joint Distribution Committee in New York, but after December 1941, this was no longer legally possible. Despite the protected status of the ZSS-JUS, it sometimes provided cover for illegal political activities. The various political organizations, socialist, communist, Zionist, Agudist, were connected with the resistance organizations, whose activities ranged from active sabotage to propaganda and, on occasion, to armed resistance. Extermination propaganda started in underground publications slightly earlier than it started being generated by the World Jewish Congress, see Appendix E, but it was not believed by the Jewish population, because nothing in their experiences supported it. Letters received from Jews deported east reassured friends and relatives. As Davidovich writes in her introductory chapter on the problems posed by the Holocaust for historical research, quote, "One impediment was the inadequacy of Jewish documentation, despite its enormous quantity. The absence of vital subjects from the records may be explained by the predicament of terror and censorship, yet, lacking evidence to corroborate or disprove, the historian will never know with certainty whether that absence is a consequence of an institutional decision not to deal with such matters, or whether it was merely a consequence of prudential policy not to mention such matters. The terror was so great that even private personal diaries, composed in Yiddish or Hebrew, were written circumspectly, with recourse to scripture, and the Talmud is a form of esoteric expression and self-imposed reticence," unquote. As is clear from all studies of German population policies in Poland, for example those of Davidovich and of Kohl, there was a constant moving about of Jews, in accordance with the general German policy of concentrating them as far east as practicable. According to the Chorherr report of March 1943, 1,449,692 Jews had been transported, quote, "out of the east provinces to the Russian east," unquote. It is further specified that 90% of these had passed through camps in the general government, and the others had passed through camps in the Wartegau, presumably meaning mainly Łódź. The huge ghetto of Warsaw was liquidated in the spring of 1943, and most of the Jews were sent further east, with Treblinka serving as a transit camp for this resettlement. This was only accomplished, however, after fierce Jewish resistance and a battle that received world publicity while it was raging. The resettlement, however, was not complete, because there were always at least some Jews at the site of the ghetto and, as remarked above, all of the larger ghettos existed in some degree throughout the war. When a resettlement was announced to a ghetto, it was the duty of the Judenrat to draw up the lists of those to be resettled. With only rare exceptions, the Jews being resettled went along peacefully, because it was well known that the resettlement was just that. It appears that epidemics were common in the ghettos. The Germans attributed them to quote-unquote a lack of discipline on the part of the Jews. They took what countermeasures they could, and, as the New York Times reported on at least one occasion, quote, Many ambulances were sent to Warsaw to disinfect the ghetto," unquote.